Okay, sorry for the delay. This will be only in English, this podium that we have now.
Yes, you can take it, or don't you want to?
Okay. I think we're still working on the technique here. Okay. Okay. Now we come to a very different political aspect. Political blogging, political journalism in countries where they have a strong censorship. And we have three speakers from China, Bahrain, and the US. And Lucie Morillon, sitting in the middle, volunteered to do the actual moderation, so I'm only introducing her. And I hope everyone has a good panel, and please at least start with a warm welcome to them. Thank you. Lucie Morillon, and you introduce the other. Okay.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be here today. Thanks for attending this panel, which is going to be, I have no doubt, very interesting. I'm really happy to be sitting here today with two amazing bloggers. I want to introduce first Amira Al-Husseini. She's a columnist, translator, editor, and blogger from Bahrain. She had been working for print media since 1991, but she started blogging in 2004. And in 2006, she joined Global Voices Online. She is now the Middle East and North Africa and Arabic language editor of Global Voices. In 2008, she ran Voices Without Vote, a project that was commissioned by Reuters to track and summarize the reactions of citizen journalists to the US presidential elections and foreign policy. So, Amira, thank you for being here with us today. Now, I would like to introduce, if it really needs an introduction, again, Michael Enti. Michael is a Chinese blogger, media researcher, and a political columnist for Chinese and foreign media. He taught international reporting at Journalism School of Shantou University. He worked as a researcher for the New York Times and the Washington Post. He's also publisher of the Far and Wide Journal. He served as a reporter in Baghdad, also for the 21st Century World Herald, and he is a once popular political blog was removed by Microsoft in 2005. It was something that has been widely publicized, and today his Twitter account, I'm not sure if I should give actually your Twitter ID. Is one of the most influential microblogging in China. So thank you both for being here today. I work for Reporters Without Borders. We are an international press freedom organization that defends the right to inform and to be informed, which means that it's not only talking about journalists, we are talking about everyone, and we have been working this past years a lot on online free speech. Today we've seen that internet censorship is a very hot topic in many countries, in more and more countries around the world, with the general trend being more repression, more control on the web, and netizens and bloggers being subjected to different kinds of threats. So we're going to start with Amira, and I'm going to ask her to share with us her experience with blogging in the Arab world. What kind of threats are bloggers confronted to? What kind of censorship do they have to deal with?
Blogging in the Arab world is not like walking in the park. If you write about things like, there is an echo. If you write about things like what you do every day or what you eat or where you walk your dog, then you're fine. But if you're talking about more denser topics like human rights, torture, freedom of expression, democracy, or if you get involved into like the three taboos we have, three taboos, which are sex, religion, and politics, then you are courting trouble, you're calling for trouble. Out of the world's 10 worst online oppressors, 5 are in the Middle East and North Africa. Bloggers are most at risk in Egypt, Syria, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Tunisia, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists in its report issued, I think, last year or the year before, which was entitled The 10 Worst Places to Be a Blogger. According to the same organization, in 2008, for the first time in the world, there were more online bloggers in jail than journalists from print media. Out of the 125 journalists who were jailed, 56 were web-based journalists or bloggers. I'll give you a short, like, historical overview. In our part of the world, TV stations, radio, and even newspapers are all government-owned or totally government-controlled. So this idea, like, of people expressing themselves and talking about things without any inhibitions or any censorship is totally foreign and new. Then 5 years ago come the internet, and everybody's on blogger and online forums and talking freely. So this created a sense of, like, the government is, like, letting go of its control. People can talk, people can write, people can upload videos of themselves, and this created a system of, wow, they cannot do that. They're not allowed to do that. So let's crack down on that. And you all know how this happens. What I'll do now is I'll give you a very brief outline of some of the censorships some of the harassments we go through in the Arab world. I come from Bahrain. Bahrain is a very, very tiny country. Not many of you may have heard of it. Has anyone here heard of Bahrain? Oh, good. Okay. So when people started blogging and blogging became a popular platform, like for expressing your views, what they did was they issued a ministerial decree saying that all bloggers have to register their blogs at the Ministry of Information. Like, nobody did it, but it was still a law. And it's still a law which exists to today. So we talked about Bahrain, so we'll start with Bahrain. Bahrain is a country which actively censors the internet. Even something, like, we have hundreds of thousands of sites which have been blocked for anything, any reason. Like, of course, all pornography is blocked, many religious sites are blocked, anything that the government doesn't want you to see or know about is blocked, including a lot of the local online forums many of the local blogs, many of the sites for the political organizations. We're not allowed to have political organizations in Bahrain anyway. So, like, they call themselves societies. Like, even those societies, their websites are blocked, and the activists working in them who have blogs are blocked too. And then the blocking is not just on their websites, but also on their Facebook accounts. And it goes on and on. Like, one of the most popular online forums in Bahrain is called bahrainonline.org, where they discuss events. And this, too, has been blocked. And its administrators were jailed for around 2 weeks in 2005 because somebody posted anti-government slogans on that website. So it's been blocked ever since, from 2005 until today. And despite that, it's one of the most popular online forums in Bahrain. Now we move to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is officially named as an enemy of the internet. It actively censors the internet, and they don't mark it. Like, they don't mask it in any way. Like, if you go and you try to access something, they'll tell you, this site is blocked. It's not that, like, it's an error or you can't access the page or anything. No, it's just, we don't want this site and it's been blocked. There's been a lot of, there's been a lot of stories which were very highly publicized about Saudi Arabian bloggers being arrested. And one of the, like, icons, like, stories we can talk about is, like, Fuad al-Farhan, who's a Saudi blogger, who was arrested for 140 days because he wrote something in support of reformists. And he no longer blogs, right? No. I wouldn't too. And for a short period of time, Saudi Arabia blocked blogger.com. as if there are no other platforms to blog on. Kuwait is more open. There is more political like freedom and openness, and it's one of the first countries to embrace democracy in this part of the world. And despite that, in 2007, we had an incident where one blogger called Bashar Sayyid was arrested for comments published on his blog by an anonymous commentator. And this really created, like, it sent shockwaves down that blog sphere, because you would think, I cannot write, and then you'd think twice before commenting on what somebody else has written, because there is jail involved. Qatar too, like, I haven't heard about a lot of censorship from Qatar, but they block social networking platforms like Tagged, for instance, is blocked there. The United Arab Emirates filters the internet as well. There are a lot of sites there which are blocked, including Flickr. So you can't upload your pictures, and every once in a while we hear stories about, oh, YouTube could be blocked there, Twitter could be blocked, and like it comes and goes. Libya a few weeks ago blocked YouTube. Oman also has a lot of laws, so any forum or website which criticizes not just the government but any of the government owned businesses could be shut down and its administrators put on trial. Moving on, Yemen has a track record over the past 3 years of intimidating and targeting bloggers, harassing them and arresting them and putting them in jail as well. Not only that, but the security apparatus actually threatened those bloggers with death, and the intimidation is increasing at an alarming rate. Egypt is an enemy of the internet, and it makes the most headlines because Egyptian internet users are very, very, very active. Like, if somebody is arrested, you hear about it immediately. They're out there on Facebook, on Twitter, on their blogs, on every single social networking platform telling the world what has happened. 2 years ago, there was an American blogger who got arrested, and he tweeted it. And immediately he said, I just got arrested. And the whole world knew about it. His name was James Bucks. Also in Egypt, like, a lot of bloggers are arrested. We have a website at Global Voices called Threatened Voices. And if you go there and you click on Egypt, you'll see the names of around 30 bloggers who were arrested and links to their stories as well. Moving on, Tunisia. Tunisia is also an enemy of the internet. We have a Tunisian blogger here, Sami, and he can tell us a lot more about it. In Tunisia, all the internet cafes are state-controlled. A lot of the sites like Blogger, WordPress, YouTube, no, that's another country, that's Turkey. What's blocked in Tunisia, Sami?
YouTube, Dailymotion, and Vatican. I mean, that's mainly
website. Okay, YouTube and Dailymotion are blocked. Wow. Okay, where are we now? That's it. Do you want to hear about Iran? No. So that's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Amir. It was an interesting overview of the situation in different countries, from countries like Saudi Arabia, where indeed censorship is something completely claimed by the authorities. I think they, when you try to access some websites that are blocked, they are telling you this is blocked by the ministry. And you can also, if you're a citizen, you can denounce some website that you deem obscene or that you just won't be blocked. So it's interesting to see this kind of censorship and other countries like Tunisia, where it's more pernicious, where the censorship is, you know, where the authorities are pretending they're not censoring or they do not censor political content, where this is actually the case. So I'm just going to turn over to Michael. China has been a lot in the news recently regarding internet censorship. because of the Google case, because of all that has been said by Hillary Clinton and this historical speech she made about the internet being at the core of the U.S. foreign policy. Can you tell us a little bit about internet censorship in China, of course, but what do Chinese netizens do when they are confronted to these problems?
Yeah, I think China now has the largest censorship system in the world, and also it is the sample and for every other countries who want to follow, right? It's not only about the country like Iran and all Arabic countries, but also including the Australia, right? So the Western countries also want to follow some part of experience that are already practiced in China. But censorship is not only about censorship. In China, censorship totally is a multi-layer system, including censorship and self-censorship. Sometimes you will fear self-censorship is more serious than censorship itself. And the censorship is not only about politics. Sometimes censorship is also about business. You know, in the past 1 year, more and more cases show now the Chinese authorities and different departments and ministries try to utilize the censorship system as the way of fighting for the license market. Because, give example, if you want to have a startup in the West, you just have your web, the domain name, and you have your host. It's easy. But in China, you should apply for licenses. You know, several years ago, you only need one license. It's by ICP license. But now you need many licenses. For example, if you own a page, if you have any link with the video, you should have a video license to the bureau in charge of the movie and the broadcasting services. Almost about a dozen ministries and the governmental department want to control this license business. You know, because it can't. Sometimes when the top leader said the internet is a battlefield, so they can utilize this as real business. And also let me first introduce the multi-layer censorship system. Generally, there is what we call China Great Firewall. It is in the gate of the when they get the Chinese internet to the American internet or Japanese through the ocean cable, there is the we call it Great Firewall. Great Firewall. Because we have a Chinese Great Wall, so we always try the Chinese Great Firewall. Any political sensitive words and any even including other sensitive world, for example, pornography, or some website, domain name, they don't want to the people, Chinese people to read. They have a long list to ban. So, for example, also including most of the famous Web 2.0 services, which are really blocked inside China, like Twitter.com, like Facebook.com, like Flickr.com, like YouTube.com. That means when you're enjoying the happiness of the internet in the West, most of the website you log on, you can't access inside China. But how can Chinese do to facing this situation? Of course, the Chinese encouraged the Chinese company to do the Chinese copycat. For example, if you have Google.com, we have Baidu.com. It's a self-censored Chinese searching website. And also, with the competition with the Google, because the help, due to the help of the censorship and the governmental sponsor, Baidu did very good compared to the Google Chinese company. And also in the year of 2002, the censorship system blocked Google.com, the whole Google site, for 1 month, just want to improve the market share of Baidu.com. You have YouTube. So in China, because the video is so hard for the China Great Firewall to censor, so they just blocked YouTube.com. So they encouraged Chinese internet users to log on their copycats like Tudou.com and Youku.com. That's definitely is very similar to YouTube.com. And also Facebook. Facebook, they was blocked after the Xinjiang riots because they claimed that the Xinjiang anti-government, anti-central government movement used Facebook to build up a group to deliver dissident information. And same as the Twitter.com is blocked just last July. But Chinese also has the largest numbers of their netizens. We have 300 million netizens in China, the same population of the whole population of the United States. So people also need to talk, to use the internet, to do the social networking. Besides the we are Chinese copycat and self-censorship, we also, the censorship system is not only about Great Firewall, and it's also about self-censorship. So every website inside China, they should have a kind of inside censor. That means they censored by themselves. Otherwise, the website itself will be punished by the government. It's kind of through punishment and the reward you can build up your sense of their self-censorship, right? And censorship is not only by punishment. It's not only punitive. Sometimes you give you the way. For example, why most of Chinese companies volunteer to do the self-censorship? Because this, only in this way, he can get a sponsor, policy sponsor from the central government. Baidu just did this. And even worse, in the year of 2002, why part of the reason Google.com was blocked inside China, it is because Baidu.com complained to the government that there were some sensitive, political sensitive words on Google.com. It's a kind of a very dirty things because it's not about punitive action made by the government. Sometimes the Chinese company think self-censorship can make you live well. And also about people, because the whole education is about propaganda. So if you practice some kind of censorship, you can do, it's not only doing well, but also because China, Deng Xiaoping opened China in 1978. So we have already opened up in the sense of personal life, economy life, and social life. In this way, compared to Iran, China is pretty free country, but not about politics. So we, in the past 30 years, Chinese people have already built up some kind of new social contract with the government. That means you give me the free personal freedom and economy, the booming, so I can submit, hand out my political rights. As long as Chinese GDP is still keeping the 8% to the 10%, as long as the Chinese miracle and as long as the Chinese successful economy story going, I think this new social contract will exist. But of course, you can see because of the financial crisis, now the Chinese government really facing the different way. So the self-censorship also can build inside the system and also inside a person. Even me, for example, if really want to, I go abroad and go back to the country easily and freely without questioning, maybe I will keep some kind of self-censorship, not directly to talk about top of a very important issues of the politics. So everyone practiced that. It's the reality of the Chinese censorship and the self-censorship. But Chinese internet always have already developed a kind of a new way to confront the censorship. For example, we use different wording. And also, this kind of trend become very popular. For example, we have a very funny animal we call the grass mood house. It's a horse. It's a llama. Yeah, but what's the English for that? But no, the real animal. Is llama? Yeah, it's llama? Is the right? It's a very weird animal. But
very cute.
We said it's a grass mood, the horse. But why? Because the Chinese character for these three characters is the same spelling with the motherfucker. So why? Because we think the censorship is really fucking system. So but what kind of, it's also bad. If you really curse on the internet against the system, you are totally bad. So we just to create a new animal, even MTV video and a song to praising of that. And also we changed the harmony society, the harmony society. We said censorship is for the harmony society. So harmony, we also said the river crab is the same spelling in Chinese. So now become this animal, the horse, the grass mood horse versus the river crab. This is a war, right? It's the netizens versus the Chinese governmental censorship. But why we use this way? Because censorship and self-censorship means threat, also means fear. When you use this very funny way to directly confront in a very artist way against the censorship, that means you do not fear. That's the way you very effectively change the situation.
Thank you, Michael. I don't want to censor you, but I just want to leave a little bit of time for the questions from the public. So thank you for your intervention. You want to ask a question? Can you stand up, if you don't mind, and speak a little louder? Or you can borrow my microphone if you want.
Yeah, I would like to know if you think that Google left China, does it help? Or other way, the question turned other way around, what would help China or people in China or even in Arabia? I think it's the same. I think it's in China it's a little bit more drastic. The system is a lot more perfect. So what would help? What could other countries do? And for example, how do you think when Google leave China, is it helpful or is it like, okay, they gave up and that's it?
I should say when we say Google pulling out of the mainland China, because it's still in China, Hong Kong is part of China, but that actually is the Chinese searching part out of China, because in China we still can use the google.com to search everything sometimes. But very important things, Google announced on their blog that they were pulled out from China, so you can see a lot of people, young people, sent flowers to the headquarters and the offices in Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Beijing. You know, in the past cases, when some headlines always said something versus China, the Chinese will rally around the flag, support the China, not something. But this is the first time when something versus China, we support Google. Why? Because Google is not only an American company. That's Gmail. That's Picasa. That's our property. So Chinese is not only stand on the Google side, we stand on our own side. But Google, when Google pulling out China, it's only the .cn service. It's the self-censored part of Google, which I think it was a mistake when Google first made decision to enter China, have the self-censorship. Because if you get used to the self-censorship, why not just use the Baidu.com? So for most people really love their free information, we have already used the Google.com, the comprehensive version of Google. I never used the Google.cm. And also, when Google pulling out of China, when Chinese people to search Google found they have already transferred the website to the Hong Kong site, and also when you type the keywords, it's not come out without the original, the older reason. No, all the display will be according to the law, you can't find the result. But now we come, it's just the internet connection cut off. So in this way, more and more Chinese netizens will know the existence of a censorship. They will push millions of people to use the VPN, to use the proxy, to access the Chinese, to the free internet, because everyone think they are not deserve the censored word, because information also means advantage in this commercial society.
Thank you. I think we have another question here.
Thank you. This morning there was a presentation from Evgeny Morozov, who said basically that the revolution thanks to internet will never happen, because internet is just as a powerful tool for the regimes, authoritarian regimes, as for the freedom fighters, to watch them, spy on them, to entertain the masses, and to broadcast propaganda and spin. What do you think about that? Is internet really an interesting media, or is it not two-sided?
I just say, because I think different countries have different stories. I just say China cases. Because by nature, this communism or any other names doesn't match the nature of internet. Internet is about decentralized information and decentralized everything. So of course Chinese government can, they are learning. They can hire people to learn how to control. Now before it's Blogsphere, now maybe more and more on Twitter.com. But is by nature, it doesn't match. I don't think there's such things called censorship 2.0, because it doesn't match. And also Twitter.com, I just give one example. Twitter.com, they already blocked Twitter.com last July. But because you have already blocked, that means you can't die twice. Now because Twitter has the API policy, everyone can build up their client on their website to access the Twitter, right? So most of Chinese Twitter users, now they use the third-party application to access Twitter. So Twitter, because of blocking, now Twitter becomes the first non-censored public and national platform for Chinese for debating, negotiating, and talking. So that's the first rare chance for Chinese people. In the past 1 year, I can say Chinese people did good. We deserve, a big fire.
Amira, you want to step in?
For us in the Middle East, it's like a double-edged sword, because both are playing the same game. And we saw this like in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict over Gaza, where there was like information from both sides swamping the internet overnight. And for us, like people on the outside, you don't know what is being said and what the real story is. It's the same with governments as well. Like they actually employ people who come through the internet for information. Otherwise, they are aware of everything that's being said whenever, like in Bahrain, I know for a fact that the Minister of Information and in addition to filtering, they have a whole army of people combing the internet for any subversive material. Other countries employ those tactics as well.
We have another question here.
I just wanted to know, I have friends in Beijing and in Bahrain too, and I know from those friends in Beijing that it's not really a problem for them to use a proxy to surpass the censorship, and as far as I understood, they are not even afraid of it. I mean, it's just like normal usage. So I would like to know, how is it in Bahrain and all these Arabic countries or Middle East countries? Is this technically possible to use a proxy? And second, are these people prosecuted? Is there any possibility to track them down?
No, but it creates a culture of fear. And if something is blocked, you automatically know, oh, I'm not supposed to see this. What if the police see me seeing this? You know, it creates that culture among people because people don't know what their rights are and what the regulations are. People are afraid. They would say like, oh, if I go to that online forum, do you think I'll be arrested? And these are people who are educated. And all proxy services are blocked. And here's one screenshot. It says that the site is blocked. This site has been blocked by the order of the Ministry of Culture and Information based on Article 19 of Decree Number 47, 2002 regarding the organization of the press, printing, and publishing in the Kingdom of Bahrain due to the publication of prohibited content on the aforementioned site, like a nonsensical sentence, and that's what there is. And this is the message which pops out every time you try to access anything. A friend of mine from Global Voices Online designed a t-shirt and sent me the link to see if I like the design for some event. And I tried to open it and I couldn't access the site. I got a site blocked and it's like a t-shirt site.
Thank you. Michael, you want to add something on the proxy and the circumvention tools or not?
It's just, I think that VPN is very popular inside China. Why? You know, Chinese government want to ban and block the free VPN, right? It's kind of a competition fight. But they seldom blocked commercial VPN. So if you buy the VPN, that's fine. Because in China, it's not only the Chinese people live in China, but also many, like a Fortune 500 company staff and workers, they work there. And they should communicate with the headquarters. Chinese economy is very crucial for China because China is a success story in the globalization. So that's why in Beijing, in most of the metropolises, that you can still use the commercial VPN to access the free internet. But of course, you need money.
Yeah, in the back. Yeah, if you can, otherwise, I mean, as you wish.
I just remembered something. Like, in Bahrain, if you go on a search engine and you try to search for the word proxy, you get this filtering message as well.
Yes, I come from Greece, and blogging is very big in Greece. In December 2008, you remember we had big riots in Greece during 1 month. And it was very astonishing how important blogging was for these riots and for the protest movement there. It actually became the most, Twitter and the blogs became the most important medium for networking for activists. On net blogging, they made appointments of where to meet, when to meet. They could distribute information they would never show in the established media. They actually forced the established media to show things the established media would never have shown. And they also, for me, the fresh thing about it was that they also somehow could also avoid the more traditional left or the more, it was somehow like a fresh movement like this. Surely in Greece we don't have censorship, yes, we don't have a censored net, but we saw also this in Iran afterwards, yes, some months after the riots in Greece. I wanted to ask you if you could, if there is something you think it's in common in your countries with this phenomenon too.
Yeah, of course I think that in China, because just like I mentioned, Twitter was already blocked, but you can't die twice. So now, ironically, Twitter becomes very open and public and a non-censored platform, just as same as Greece and as all the Western countries. So the same situation you mentioned in your country will happen in our country. So people use Twitter to tweet up, to mobilize the social protest, to communicate to each other, because China is so big. And we have except the People's Daily, this the very party newspaper, we have no market-oriented national newspaper. But Twitter now built up the first uncensored platform. So you are, even you are remote provinces, you know, very, you are peasant, you know, you met the social injustice. But when you get tweet, or you call your friend to tweet, the Beijing media guy, or even Reuters in Beijing, corresponding in Beijing, he can easily follow your news and retweeting you. So you, it's actually the build up very effective platform for activists, for lawyers, for liberal professors. I think that's because thanks to the blocking, right? So we have totally free, because the 100% freedom of speech on the blocked Twitter.com. So that's, it's a good thing. So in the past 1 year, almost every week on the Chinese Twitter community, they mobilized the one events. So sometimes not only about China. Last December, we have the hashtag called CN4Iran. It's the Chinese netizens supporting the green revolutionary, the Iranian people, and become the number 4 of all the trending topics in the Twitter.com worldly. So this is the first time Chinese not only self-interest or nationalist, we support the other country's freedom. Because now, because of Twitter.com, we know freedom is not only about American freedom, it's about everyone's universal freedom.
What is the general opinion about censoring the internet? Is it thoughts like, "Oh, we have our proxies, we're fine, we don't use, we don't need anything," or is it, "We need revolution, please everybody help us," or is it, "I'm so unhappy without the free internet"?
If I live in a small country, I can say, "Please help me. Save us." But I live in a country as big as Canada, America, and Russia. Chinese people only can only depend on ourselves to seek, you know, the democracy. Because democracy in a big country just means democracy within. So freedom of speech, of course, I think we have censorship. It's our duty to push down this great firewall. But also, that's the people outside China, but you should understand our fighting, our situation inside China. We can become friends in the same front, just like we support by the hashtag way to support the Iranian people. I can't say, "Come on, come to our country to save us." No. Chinese democracy only can build up by Chinese people. But if you support internet freedom, so stop censorship, not only in China, but also in every country, including Australia, Britain, right?
I think we have time for one or two questions maximum. Anyone else want to
ask a question.
So yes, this is more directed to Amira. Something which did not turn up in Evgeny Morozov's talk today, but which I think should probably have, is what I think he pointed to in a recent blog post, that there's a high probability that the internet as a communication tool empowers illiberal movements in the Arab world. He especially pointed to the Muslim Brotherhood, which is in fact the strongest opposition group in Egypt. So my question do you think that free communication tools will lead to a freer society, or could it be that free communication tools could lead to a change, a regime change, without a change of to a more freer society?
First of all, you're trying to get me into trouble. Okay. Secondly, the Muslim Brotherhood are on the blogs and are on Twitter, and they have all their, you know, they're very active. There is a blogger, an Egyptian blogger called Mahmoud, who blogs as Ana Akhwan, which means I'm Akhwan, which means I'm from the Brotherhood. And he puts all their information there and what they're doing and even their statements whenever there's something. And many of them are active on Twitter. Now, does more freedom for everybody to express themselves means more freedom in real life? It will take some time for that to transpire. Like people can aspire for freedom, but freedom, I really don't know how to go about it. Like, to say it in a way where, because if I say what I want to say, I'll get into trouble. But if I don't say what I want to say, you leave saying, like, what is this girl talking about?
But I think it's quite okay if you keep your mouth shut.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We have one last question over there.
It's not really a question, but maybe. I think that freedom in Germany, in Bahrain, wherever, expressed by the internet, it comes with a certain responsibility. And the thing is, what the people say is, we want to take this responsibility, we want to make our mistakes. So whatever you think about Muslim Brotherhood, and if this is a mistake, or whatever you think that is a religion from the Middle Age, or whatever, that's your opinion, but not the opinion of many other million people. So if people today want to make mistakes, they have to be allowed to make mistakes. And if you can make mistakes and share mistakes, then the learning goes a little bit quicker. So I think that's the most important thing. That of course, there's a lot of cultural cultural backgrounds which are maybe even less prepared for this freedom of the internet as it is in the Western society, which is, I think, also not prepared for the freedom of the internet in total. And so I think that's something we have to understand if we talk about the freedom of expression in different from in the internet, presented in the physical world of different nations and cultures. And for that, I think, like, Global Voices is really a good website to see the reality around the world, and to think about that and to reflect about it. Like in Kiwi, in Fiji, sorry, not in New Zealand, in Fiji, there's also quite a repressive thing going on right now. So you wouldn't maybe expect that on Fiji, and maybe who in Germany cares about Fiji? But it's nice to see, to learn, if you look in the mirror, in the mirror of other nations and cultures. And I think that is what we have to take the discussion on. I don't know, you know, I'm a little bit sick and tired of, I know it's hard in China, and I know it's hard in Bahrain, and we have also our fucked up politicians here who have no clue about the internet. So I know it's hard, but if we want to make this right, we have to think about our culture and what does the internet mean for that. And then we can talk to the normal people who have no clue about what a website can do. Like, I think that has to be done now.
But
otherwise,
I just add once about something about this. I really think because the internet freedom is a new thing. This right is a new right. You should compare to the you know, ground right. For example, the freedom of speech on the ground. Now, so it's a comparison. But in China, it's very weird because we lack of the freedom of speech on the ground. We lack the press freedom on the ground. So internet freedom is the first freedom we practice. So we on the opposite way. We first practice internet freedom. So now we order the press freedom. So then we go to the political freedom. So we never in China said, we always say, someone said, propaganda said, it's American democracy, Western democracy. But now we never said, it's American internet freedom. No, it's the interference of our own. So that's the best thing for China. We first practice this on the internet, then we seek more on the ground.
You want to add something?
Yeah, like most of the young people, and when I say most, you'll agree with me, even people from poor backgrounds who can't afford to have their own computers can access the internet at internet cafes, and they're widely available. I'll tell you an example from Bahrain, because that's where I grew up and lived all my life. When the internet was first introduced, and it's a very steep cost, like it will cost you like 30 or 40 euros a month, or maybe more, and that's money not everybody can afford. So what they did was, like one house in the neighborhood would have internet, and then they would make makeshift connections, and then you'll have 400 or 500 people using the same line. So if you go to any neighborhood, you'll see one house and then all those wires dangling everywhere, and you think, like, what's going on here? And they're all the internet wires. So, like, access is there, and people are using it. What the governments did was they pressured the telecom providers when they saw how popular internet was and how people were expressing themselves and sharing information like, oh, the riot police are here, or, you know, like, because there are a lot of demonstrations and rallies and civil unrest, which nobody hears about. But all this information is on the internet minute by minute as it's happening. They're uploading pictures, uploading videos. So what they did was they put a threshold on internet use. So like if I have a house, I pay and I have only like 2 megabytes per month. And I can't have more unless I pay more. So this restricted this freedom of exchange of information. Okay, they were stealing the service, but they were spreading more information. So now they're curtailing it and holding them from the hand, which hurts more. So if you want to have access to the internet, first of all, you need to bypass the proxy. And Michael has as much information as I do about that, because everything is blocked, like everything. If you go to the normal sites, the proxy sites, they're all blocked. And those people are so creative and know all the latest tools and gadgets, and they exchange them between each other. They can access anything that's blocked.
Yeah, just want to add something. It's interesting to see the different perspective we can have on this issue, whether we are based in a country that is supposed to respect freedom of speech, and where you come in from a country where the internet is censored or controlled. It should be the topic of another panel, but we've seen democratic regimes in this past months and years actually trying to regulate the net even more in the name of the fight against child pornography or theft of intellectual property. So they have tried under these excuses to set up some filtering system, and this is something that is pretty worrying for the future of internet. Of course, we don't want to be saying that blocking a few websites dealing with child pornography is wrong, but in setting up automatic filtering system is another issue, because when the tools are here, you can use them for other purposes, and that's what is really worrying. But to finish here, I just wanted to thank our two panelists. It was interesting to see and hear what you had to say, and I guess you can follow them on Twitter to know more about what's happening. Thank you, everyone, for coming.